It's time for our weekly check of the top national news. This afternoon, Senate leaders announced a two-year spending deal that would prevent a government shutdown on Friday. It puts more money into the defense budget and domestic programs. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer speaking on the Senate floor today.
There are one or two final details to work out, but all the principles of the agreement are in place. The budget deal doesn't have everything Democrats want. It doesn't have everything Republicans want. But it has a great deal of what the American people want.
The Senate deal faces an uncertain future as it moves into the House. And later we'll take a look at the Democratic rebuttal to the Nunes memo that made waves last week. And the president had some choice words for Democrats over not clapping for him at the State of the Union. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the deal made in the Senate today? What do you think of the ongoing political fight over the Russia investigation? Call in now at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org.
Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he covers, among other things, Paul Ryan and House Republicans. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back with you guys.
Well, we were on this verge of another government shutdown potentially, Scott. Now we've got this deal in the Senate. Broad strokes, what is in this Senate agreement?
Right. So this sets spending levels for the next two fiscal years. It basically busts the 2011 Budget Control Act caps and boosts spending for both the Pentagon and domestic programs by about $300 billion above current levels. So it intends to provide a little bit more certainty for federal agencies, most importantly for the Pentagon. A couple other highlights: it would raise the debt ceiling for 1 year all the way to March 2019. That would be well past the 2018 midterm elections. And it provides billions of extra funding for disaster aid, for the opioid epidemic, for a number of other health care programs. So there's a lot of spending in here. And that's causing a little bit of consternation for the fiscal budget hawks.
If this passed, it sounds like this would mean we wouldn't have these monthly or even bi-weekly budget debates and shutdown threats. But if, how big is the if here, Scott?
Well, that's the question right now, is if they can cobble together the votes first in the Senate, where this deal was struck, and then across the Capitol in the House, where right now House conservatives and the fiscal hawks that I was talking about are balking at this plan. They're really in revolt coming out of a meeting with the Speaker of the House earlier today. They just don't like all the spending, particularly the raising of the debt ceiling without equal offset. And so that leaves the ball really in Nancy Pelosi's court, and that's what they're sort of negotiating right now. Pelosi has not signed off on the agreement. She still has a number of priorities that she wants addressed. And if Paul Ryan can't get enough Republican votes, then he will have to sort of go hat in hand to Nancy Pelosi and see if she can supply some of the additional votes to get this across the finish line in the House.
And Nancy Pelosi with a multi-hour, I don't know if you call it a filibuster if it's in the House and not the Senate, but a long speech on the floor anyway. And she is holding out, it sounds like, for a commitment from Paul Ryan, similar to what Mitch McConnell gave Democrats, saying, if you want our votes on this, you got to promise us a vote on DACA, the protections for people who were brought over illegally as minors to the United States. Is that what she's aiming for here?
That's right. Speaker Ryan has already said that Republicans will at some point move forward with a vote to protect these so-called Dreamers, these young undocumented immigrants or DACA recipients. But Nancy Pelosi wants a firmer commitment, just like what Chuck Schumer got in the Senate. Mitch McConnell has basically said next week there will be a rigorous debate on immigration, on border security, but also focusing on these Dreamers, and at some point they will have more of an open process to see which immigration deal that senators can rally around. Paul Ryan is not so interested in a very open process that he wouldn't necessarily know what the outcome would be in the House of Representatives. He wants to control what legislation comes to the floor, and so he is less inclined to give Nancy Pelosi that same commitment. And that's sort of where we're at loggerheads right now over the immigration issue. That's why Nancy Pelosi has not yet signed on to this broader two-year spending caps deal. But in principle, it seems like the four leaders, both in the House and the Senate, agree on the numbers and on the priorities. It really is the issue holding everything up really is about these Dreamers and the immigration issue.
And President Trump weighed in earlier this week. He says we need stronger border security as part of any deal he would approve. Here he is talking this week about wanting to see a shutdown if that wasn't the case.
If we don't change it, let's have a shutdown. We'll do a shutdown, and it's worth it for our country. I'd love to see a shutdown if we don't get this stuff taken care of. So we have to strengthen our borders, not by a little bit, but by a lot.
So the president taking a pro-shutdown stance there, it sounds like. Is that is the sense you're getting in Congress that, hey, no, we don't want a shutdown on either side of the aisle?
Yeah, that wasn't necessarily the message that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan wanted to send to the country after we already experienced a very short three-day shutdown last month. And so, of course, the president of the United States always throws a curveball into these negotiations, and I guess that's sort of expected these days. But that was not a welcome comment up here on Capitol Hill, and I think both parties would agree that nobody wants a repeat of last month to shut down the government. Now, just to remind folks, funding expires at the end of Thursday, at the stroke of midnight, heading into early Friday morning. And so Democrats realizing, you know, we probably will need to have a series of votes on a bill to avert a shutdown, had to actually cancel their annual issues retreat, which was across the Eastern Shore, about 90 minutes from D.C. They actually are now huddling in the Capitol and holding their retreat here in the Capitol, just because time is of the essence.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill about the latest in national news. We'll keep watching what goes on with this negotiation. But let's turn to now the latest on the Nunes memo on the FBI and the Russia probe. There is a Democratic response memo from the same committee, Democrats on the same committee. Where is that memo now? They can't just release it on their own volition. What's the latest?
Right. So earlier this week, the House Intelligence Committee, led by Republican Devin Nunes and Democrat Adam Schiff, voted unanimously to release the Democratic response to the earlier Nunes memo that was released. And so right now, it's currently at the White House stage. The White House has 5 days to decide whether to publicly release that memo. You know, all indications are that Trump will go ahead and give the green light and release the memo, and so we will hear the Democratic response. Now, the concern from folks like Adam Schiff and other Democrats on that committee are that Trump may move to try to redact some of this 10-page memo, and Democrats really feel that that would be politically motivated in order to try to undermine the Democrats' argument. And of course, this all goes back to the Russia investigation. A lot of Democrats believe that the initial Nunes memo, the Republican memo, was designed to try to undermine the credibility of the various Russia investigations into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. And so, it's a very convoluted procedure. But I expect by the end of this week, we will see some version of the Adam Schiff memo. We just don't know how much of that will be redacted.
And Scott, this dueling memo story has gotten pretty salty. Are you seeing a lot of bad blood on that committee and beyond in the House?
There is an incredible amount of media attention. You know, on a daily basis, there is anywhere from, you know, 20 to 25 cameramen and reporters staking out this one committee, which is very unusual. And they're in the hallways. Any lawmakers coming in and out of the secure classified briefing room are immediately grabbed for an interview. It has been sort of a distraction. Of course, we have these much broader national issues like the government shutdown that's taking up much of the media space. But There are specific reporters and cameramen just dedicated to the Russia investigation, and especially in these recent weeks, to the memo issue.
Scott Wong is with us, senior staff writer at The Hill. We're talking about the week's top political news.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of the preliminary budget deal struck in the Senate today? What do you think of the president describing Democrats as treasonous for their response to his State of the Union address? And what do you think, or what do you want to see in the Democratic rebuttal to the release of the Nunes memo that we were just talking about? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We're talking to Scott Wong right now, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at the top stories of the week in national politics.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of the politics at Capitol Hill right now? What do you think of the president calling Democrats out for not clapping for him at the State of the Union? Call in now with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. Or you can send a tweet to @CentralTimeWPR.
Scott, let's get into that, the treasonous comments, the backstory. There's the State of the Union address. Democrats maintain a stony silence through a lot of it. President Trump speaking in Ohio about his new tax plan on Monday went off script, I guess, a little bit. He said Democrats who weren't applauding were un-American, even treasonous. Here's a listen.
And you have the other side, even on positive news, really positive news like that, they were like death and un-American, un-American. Somebody said treasonous. I mean, yeah, I guess why not? You know. Can we call that treason? Why not? I mean, they certainly didn't seem to love our country very much.
What's the response been like, Scott?
Well, I think there's been condemnation, you know, on especially from the Democratic side. You know, Tim Walz, who's running for Minnesota governor, he's a member of Congress. He served in the National Guard, in fact, retired as a sergeant major and was the highest ranking soldier ever to serve in the military and serve in Congress. He said in a tweet in response, "I didn't serve 24 years in uniform. Serving this country to be called treason is simply for disagreeing with the President of the United States." I think most Democrats were quick to condemn the president's remarks, especially that word treasonous. And Jeff Flake, a Republican of Arizona, who is no friend of the president, but he is a Republican, and he has clashed with the president repeatedly throughout the campaign, and once the president did once he took office, he gave a floor speech, an impassioned floor speech, condemning the president, saying that treason is not a punchline of a joke. It's a word and an idea that should be taken very seriously and not said offhand at a speech, you know, at a rally. And he called it a vile remark and unbecoming of the president. But the White House pushed back and said the president was simply making a joke. It was a sarcastic remark and should be taken tongue in cheek.
Let's bring on a caller or two on this. Robert is with us in Dodgeville. Robert, hi.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, what I think is that when Barack Obama took office, Mitch McConnell made a point soon after that to announce that he was going to do all he could to make sure that nothing went forward while Obama was president. In Trump's mind, that sounds like a treasonous type of issue to me. I don't think it's treasonous, but certainly a Trump would come across saying that that's a treasonous act. And then when you have Trump making the comment that let's have a shutdown, we need one, I want one, then that sounds like it could certainly be construed as a treasonous kind of comment.
Robert, thanks for the call. I want to bring in Sven in Appleton now on this. Sven, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you think?
I think treasonous is stretching it a little bit. I think it's more of a kind of a joke on the part. But at the same time, you know, I think it's more of a disrespectful act that they should clap for the president on good notes. And there were a lot of people in the audience that deserved to have a hand, and Democrats just sat. I did watch the whole address and thought it went very well. And I think that the Democrats have to stop basically blockading on everything and start giving a little more respect.
Sven, thanks a lot. So our two callers there, Scott, giving two sides of the reaction, covering it pretty well, the broad range of reaction to the State of the Union, and then the president's follow-up comments this week.
Well, Democrats are under enormous pressure to oppose the president's agenda. Particularly their liberal base is incredibly fired up and will be fired up throughout the 2018 election cycle. They want Democrats in office to oppose the president at every turn, to oppose him on health care repeal and oppose him on tax reform, and to oppose some of the controversial comments that he makes. And so I think that was, sort of reflected in the Democrats' actions in the State of the Union by not clapping, by sitting stone-faced. They knew the cameras were on them. And so it was sort of a silent protest of the president of the United States. I will say it's much different than the vocal protest we heard during one of Obama's speeches before this same Congress many years ago, where Joe Wilson shouted, "You lie," in a very controversial moment in the United States Capitol, and he was condemned roundly by both parties for shouting at the president. So in this case, it was a silent protest, and I think a lot of members said, we're protected under the First Amendment. We can choose to be silent, and that is our freedom of speech.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at the latest in national politics. Want to move on to a couple more issues before we're done, Scott. Congress, the House in particular, passed a bill yesterday with broad bipartisan support that changes the system for reporting and responding to sexual assault and sexual harassment allegations in Congress. What changes here, Scott?
Well, it basically streamlines the process for Capitol Hill staffers, people who work on the Capitol, to report and to file complaints about sexual harassment and other types of discrimination and harassment in the workplace. It makes it optional for staffers to go through mediation and counseling. Previously, that was required, and a lot of these folks who went through sexual harassment experiences said, it sort of brought back a lot of bad memories, and they didn't like that experience of being forced to go through counseling in order to file a complaint. Probably the most significant part of this new law is it requires lawmakers who reach a settlement with an accuser to personally reimburse taxpayers within 90 days if they reach a settlement. Previously, a lot of people were aghast to learn that taxpayers have been on the hook paying tens of thousands of dollars for lawmakers to settle such sexual harassment claims with, members of their staff or other people who work on the Hill. So that no longer will be the case. Lawmakers will have to reimburse taxpayers in the future.
And then, Scott, you're on the Paul Ryan beat. Paul Ryan was in the news, some backlash this week over a tweet about what he saw as the benefit of the new Republican tax plan. What happened there?
Well, he's been promoting the tax plan like crazy, noting every, wage increase and every tax cut that companies have been publicizing across the country. And he got into a little bit of hot water when he promoted a tweet about a woman in Pennsylvania, a Pennsylvania secretary, who told the Associated Press that she saw a weekly increase of $1.50 a week from her from these tax reforms, and she said that was enough to buy her probably a Costco membership for the year. Paul Ryan promoted that story and was quickly faced backlash from Democrats and other critics who said basically $1.50 is not that much, and corporations are getting billions and billions of dollars in tax cuts, and you're promoting a woman who's getting $1.50. So he quickly deleted that tweet. I surmise that it wasn't Paul Ryan himself who tweeted it, but perhaps an aide to Paul Ryan. And that tweet was immediately deleted, and it seems like everyone's sort of moved on from there.
And Scott, do you think the battle for public opinion on this tax plan is going to be a big deal in this year's elections?
Oh, certainly. We're already seeing that. And, you know, you can see that from the aggressive campaign that Ryan and other Republicans are waging right now and promoting, you know, promoting the tax plan. You know, that was really the only major accomplishment of last year. And so that's basically what they're staking the 2018 election on, that Americans are going to see benefits from the tax plan in their weekly paychecks when they go ahead and file their tax returns in April. And they're hoping that, you know, those good feelings from those tax cuts will carry them through the November election and help them maintain the majorities in the House and the Senate.
And Scott, looking ahead, if this budget deal goes through and the debt ceiling limit isn't looming quite as close for a while, what's next for Congress? Is it going to be immigration?
Well, they certainly will have to deal with the immigration issue. You know, next month there is a deadline for these DACA recipients, these young undocumented immigrants that Trump has set. Now, Trump could punt that deadline down the road sometime. That's entirely possible. And you know, we have seen Congress and Washington kick the can down the road on other big issues in the past. So that is one possibility. But it seems like there will have to be some sort of broader immigration deal dealing with border security and the DACA kids. And then, of course, the only other issue that possibly could get done during a tough election year is infrastructure. And we are going to see in the coming days President Trump really lay out in detail his plan for a big infrastructure package that he wants to present to Congress.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
That's Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. He joined us for a weekly look at the top stories in national news.